This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, April the 10th, 2015. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We have extracts for you from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending Friday, April the 10th. As ever, Gordon and Liz Legg are our editors. I'd just like to say that if you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And just a reminder here that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or you can go back to any of the tracks if you want to listen again. If you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, Irene will help you with that also. Just give her a call and she'll make the necessary arrangements. Her number again is 01962 870 370. And those of you who have cute computers or tablets, you'll know that as well as using your memory sticks in the box, you can find it more convenient to access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website and click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click downwards. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. Now, I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter, and your readers are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
Before we begin, I'd like to give you a reminder about our own activities which might interest you. The annual general meeting of Talking Newspapers is to be on Tuesday, the 5th of May, at 2 p.m. at Littleton Village Hall. This AGM is also a celebration of our 25th anniversary as an organisation, so there will be tea and cake following the formal proceedings. It'll be a great opportunity to meet up with some of the volunteers from Winchester Talking Newspaper. That's those of us who read, edit and prepare your weekly recordings. The guest speaker will be Simon Parsons, who's from the British Wireless for the Blind Fund. We would be delighted to see you at the meeting. The main headlines this week are Silver Hill Inquiry is mapped out, No Hasty Decisions, Councillors Pledge, 20 Lifeline Care Jobs to go due to cuts. Can we have the first headline story, please, Claire?
Silver Hill Inquiry is mapped out. Report due out by the summer. The solicitor tasked with investigating Winchester City Council's controversial handling of the Silver Hill scheme has announced early details of her brief. Claire Lloyd-Jones will examine documents and interview key figures behind the £165 million city centre development ahead of a report to be presented to Council by the summer. The £200,000 inquiry was announced in February after a judicial review found the Council had twice breached European law when it kept the project of shops and flats from commercial tender. Ms Lloyd-Jones has been briefed on the project's 18-year history and will also invite comments from members of the public. In a statement, she said, the review will address whether appropriate advice was sought, whether that advice was correctly interpreted, whether it was clearly presented in reports to members, and whether it was taken into account in decision-making. It will address the judicial review, departures from the original brief and their reasons, and any relevant matters emerging from the 2012 compulsory purchase order process and any subsequent changes. The review will make findings of fact suggest lessons to be learned, and make other recommendations for the future. She added that interviewees would include past and present councillors, officers of the council, specialist advisers, and contractors. When asked to clarify whether she would speak to co-developer TIAA Henderson Real Estate, which requested changes that led to the unlawful action, Ms. Lloyd-Jones said, "I haven't finalised the list of people that I'm speaking to, and so I can't at this stage answer that question." She declined further comment. Civic chiefs have been keen to ensure the review is independent of councillors and Guildhall staff after transparency concerns from Silver Hill campaigners. Simon Eden, the council's chief executive, told the Hampshire Chronicle, "Ms. Lloyd-Jones has decided on parameters and dates. The only message from us was that she should examine everything that she considers relevant to the JR, i.e. Judicial Review, judgment. Public submissions for Ms. Lloyd-Jones' consideration should be emailed to Silver Hill Review at winchester.gov.uk, all small letters, by the end of April."
No hasty decisions, councillors pledge. Leader frustrated over developers' silence. Winchester civic chiefs united to show they will not be rushed into making a hasty decision on the future of the £165 million Silver Hill development. There was cross-party support for a Lib Dem motion at council that no changes will be made to the deal with developer TIAA Henderson Real Estate until the independent review on decision-making has reported. Claire Lloyd-Jones is undertaking that review following the defeat of the City Council and Henderson in the High Court over procurement issues in an action brought by Councillor Kim Gottlieb. At last Wednesday's meeting, which was updated on the future of the Brooks Centre, Councillor Gottlieb proposed that no action be taken on Silver Hill until Ms. Lloyd-Jones has reported. The timing of her work could be crucial. From June the 1st, the development agreement says that if conditions are not met, then the council and Henderson can walk away from the deal. Henderson is currently considering its options and frustrating councillor leader Frank Pearson, who said, "I have every intention of asking Henderson what on earth they are doing." Councillor Gottlieb said, "What we do know is that if we let the review be overtaken by events, events such as the 2004 agreement becoming unconditional within the next 8 weeks, so that the council finds itself unable to put any single recommendation into effect, the whole review could become a completely meaningless exercise. At that point, the council would look very foolish, and the public would be rightly outraged. They would regard the commissioning of the review as a sham, something that was never intended to have any use or purpose. They will say that the council was only pretending to respond to a judgment that found it was in serious breach of procurement regulations." Councillor Gottlieb withdrew his motion in favour of the Lib Dem alternative, which allows the council more flexibility and calls for two external opinions on the project's financial viability. Lib Dem councillor Martin Todd said it was important that the council looked into how Henderson had flip-flopped over whether the approved 2009 scheme was viable or not. Supporting the motion, Councillor Pearson said, "I don't know what Henderson's intentions are. There is a lot of speculation, some possibly right, some absolutely wrong. That is why I have every intention of asking Henderson what on earth they are doing. It is for them to approach us, and they haven't as yet." Councillor James Burns, business portfolio holder, was asked about the future of the Brooks Centre, which is set for sale in a cluster of sites across the south owned by the collapsed DiStefano property group. In an answer to a written question from Councillor Brian Laming, he said, We are considering our position in relation to the head lease, adding that a new master plan for the entire area may be an option. Henderson, meanwhile, appears to have cooled its interest in the Brooks. In January, Martin Perry, development director, said the firm could intervene to protect it from being taken down market. However, Mr. Perry told the Chronicle on Tuesday, "I am not aware that the business is looking at the Brooks at the current time, as our focus is on the appeal to the recent court ruling. We believe that if nothing is done to the Brooks as a result of an ownership change, its prospects will still be enhanced by its close proximity to the development of Silver Hill." He did not respond to email questions about Silver Hill.
20 Lifeline care jobs go due to cuts. 20 Lifeline jobs for the elderly have been lost in Winchester because of cuts at Hampshire County Council. The City Council has made redundant staff who helped people in sheltered housing after the Tory-controlled county cut its supporting people budget. 34 staff, the equivalent of 27 full-time posts, provided support through Lifeline alarm monitoring. 10 staff have been kept on to continue to monitor the Lifeline service to the wider community, said a council spokesman. There were 4 vacancies, but 20 staff were made redundant last week. None was available for comment. The spokesman said, "All 20 made redundant worked on delivering County Council-funded support. As Hampshire County Council did not renew the contract, the City Council is no longer the provider of that support." The City Council has commissioned an external alarm monitoring service. The supported people budget for Winchester sheltered housing has been slashed by £600,000, the council was told last Wednesday. Hampshire is making the cuts at the same time as spending millions on management consultants. The Chronicle revealed last week that £12.8 million has been spent on outside advice between January 2013 and September 2014. The £450,000 cost of redundancies will have to be met from City Council budgets, although it stresses that this will come from housing rents and not the general fund. Steve Miller, the Conservative City Council portfolio holder for housing, said, "It's very sad news for the employees and customers. They won't get the level of service they were getting previously. The housing team tried extremely hard to stop this. We didn't want to do this, but it was a service provided by the County Council. We hope to minimise the impact." Former Mayor and City Councillor Sue Nelms uses the Lifeline service. She told Council, "There's no point having a Lifeline, because if you phone up, they can't send anyone anyway. There is limited help for council tenants, but private citizens like myself have no one to call on if we are ill or have a fall. I have no idea how many others are in my situation, but I guess that there must be a good few. I'm still trying to source another means of feeling safer than I do now." Lib Dem City Councillor Martin Todd said, "A lot of people are very worried about the change to the alarm system. There is a real risk the whole policy is going to be counterproductive. For some people, the knowledge of having people at the end of an alarm call means they're able to carry on living at home. The risk is that some people have to go into more expensive care because of cuts to a relatively cheap service, providing a really helpful service and giving peace of mind and the convenience of living in your own home. The law of unintended consequences." A spokesman for Hampshire Age Concern declined to comment, but referred anyone affected by the cuts to its helpline on 0800 328 7154. An estimated £500,000 to £600,000 is also set to be cut from the county budget for the socially excluded, which has caused the closure of Milford House Hostel on Christchurch Road. The county intends to recommission all accommodation for mental health children's services, probation services and excluded groups. The aim is to provide better value for money and more services can be provided for less funding, Councillor Miller told Council in a written answer.
Thank you very much, and those are our headlines for this week. And we have the death notices for you now, and that will be followed by a Christian comment, which will be read by Claire. Bird, Frederick Robin Bird, died peacefully on 31st of March, aged 85.
Gellander, Jean Emily, née Payne Gellander, on 4th April, aged 87.
Hayter, Brian John Hayter, on the 25th of March.
Lovelock, Dorothy Georgina Lovelock, peacefully, on 31st of March, aged 98.
Richardson, Dorothy Alice née Reimer Richardson, peacefully at Longstock, aged 97.
Salmon, Elizabeth Salmon, formerly of Cromwell Road, on 24th March, aged 86.
Weeks, Betty Weeks, on the 4th of April in Flowerdown Nursing Home, aged 94.
Yaldron, Doris May Yaldron, on 29th of March, aged 88.
Thank you. And on to Christian comment, please, Claire. It's Rosemary Baker contributing this week, I think.
And she's headed it, Beliefs are personal and part of being human. We're now in the post-Easter period, and the Christian Church will begin to study once again the post-resurrection appearances of Jesus. Beyond Belief is the name of a Radio 4 programme that looks at the place of religion and faith in today's complex society. It might be considered an appropriate description by many for belief in the resurrection at all. Yesterday, on a Methodist online forum, there was an announcement of an old tomb being excavated near the supposed site of Jesus' burial and bones being found. The question was asked if this would have an effect on people's belief. Some years ago, when I was training to be a local preacher, this topic was one of the essay questions set in the New Testament Studies section. I can remember reading it with horror, as I didn't want to shape my faith by even considering the question. Surprisingly, perhaps, having tackled it, I found the opposite happened, and my faith was in fact strengthened. Belief is at the root of much that is in the news today. It is the cause of wars, violence, economic crises, racism. For beliefs define how we see the world and act within it. Without them, though, there would be no cathedrals, no nature reserves, no science, no music, and no art. Whatever beliefs you hold, it's hard to imagine life without them. Beliefs, more than anything else, are what make us human. They also come so naturally that we rarely stop to think how bizarre belief is. Philosophy has made little progress in understanding beliefs, but increasingly neuroscientists and psychologists have begun to look at the subject. They have studied human behaviour and thinking by looking at people with damaged brains and mental illness, who often display beliefs that are not recognised by other supposedly rational human beings. These abnormal beliefs are called delusions. Studies, however, show that there is quite a range of beliefs held in the population at large. For instance, some examples are 46.4% of people believe that their body or part of it is misshapen or ugly. 40% of people believe that they are exceptionally gifted, but others do not recognise the fact. And 25% of people believe that people they know disguise themselves as others to manipulate or influence you. The uncomfortable conclusion they come to is that many of our beliefs come from gut feelings, which arise from a combination of our evolved psychology-based biology and culture. Richard Dawkins wrote about the God delusion. Others have refuted his thinking. As I discovered myself in the end, it comes down to your own experience. In this case, mine of encountering a resurrected Christ. And, as we said, that's by Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you, Claire. And we have editorial comment now, and the editor has gone back to those council staff cuts. More human cost of the financial cutbacks is set to be borne in Winchester. The City Council has made redundant 20 members of staff who operated the Lifeline service for people living in sheltered housing. It follows a reduction in grant from the County Council. The City says it will carry on offering a service, but clearly it will not be as comprehensive, as reliable as before. There will be a lot of elderly people worried now about what will happen should they need swift help. The latest cutbacks follow the slashing of the county budget for supporting vulnerable people from £24 million to less than £14 million. This has resulted in the impending closure of Milford House Hostel on Christchurch Road and uncertainty over the future of other accommodation. The Chronicle sympathises with public authorities having to make their money go further, even if the county is spending £19,000 a day on management consultants, as revealed in this newspaper last week. But the issue here is whether these cuts are efficient. Will the reductions in one budget simply increase the burden on another part of the system? And we go on to letters to the editor now. And Robin's going to kick us off with the first of 9 letters from a very mixed mailbag this week.
And the first letter is from Callum Kennard of the University of Winchester, with the title, Increase in Students is Pushing Up Rents. I want to draw your readers' attention to the way in which the universities and student landlords are distorting the local housing market. Expansion of student numbers by the School of Art and University of Winchester has greatly increased demand for lodgings. Landlords specialising in student accommodation have realised what a goldmine this has given them. I pay £450 a month for one room in an ex-council house in which 5 of us pay the same rent. Our landlord is receiving £26,000 a year in rental income. I know of other students paying more than £500 a month. The result is that everyone on low incomes living in a rented home is paying too much. Winchester is now in the top 5 most expensive cities in the UK, much more expensive than Southampton or Portsmouth. Landlords can outbid local people to buy houses offered for sale, and this is pricing out essential workers such as the police and NHS. I am launching a campaign to try and improve things for both students and local residents. First, the universities must restrict their student intake so that no further increase is allowed until all first and second year students can live in halls of residence. This will return some desperately needed homes back to local families. Second, the university and city planners must prioritise the building of new student accommodation. There are good sites available next to Erasmus Student Village and the prison and elsewhere. No more homes should be allowed to be converted for students. Thirdly, the local council must provide a second waste bin for any house with 5 or more students. The present restriction on bins is leading to unacceptable levels of litter and waste in the streets of the estates where students live. We need to give homes back to local residents and make proper provision for students. I hope your readers will want to support my campaign. They can visit my Facebook page at www.facebook.com/groups/Give Homes Back to Our Community, or one word. Callum Kennard, Stanmore Lane, Second Year Politics and Global Studies, University of Winchester.
Officials should be held to account, says Bill Hoad. Following on from the jointly signed letter, which appeared in your issue of March the 19th, concerning the holding of officers to account at the City Council, if we simply apply Council Leader Frank Pearson's accountability scheme to the medical profession, another public service, it would be akin to a doctor who, having advised the removal of a limb, then proceeds to cut off the wrong limb. After the operation, the doctor simply apologises, saying that when the patient has fully recovered, he or she will be only too pleased to excise the remaining limb that he or she should have removed in the first place. The doctor would then probably retire, or be retired, and live on a fat pension once he or she had managed to find somewhere quiet to live in order to escape from the international media attention that the case would have received. The case would doubtless have been the subject of reviews by the governing bodies of the medical profession and every other person who saw a photograph of the poor patient either in a wheelchair or being spoon-fed. We, the citizens of Winchester, are in turn being spoon-fed by Councillor Pearson and his cronies in their attempts to cover up the misdemeanours of an earlier coterie, many of whom are gaily embarking on new and wondrous developments to help raise Winchester's profile. Any review that was conducted by Councillor Pearson, presumably behind closed doors, would not warrant the triple expenditure of the time that it took to conduct it, which one assumes would not be too long, the amount of hot air that it took to air it, or the vast quantity of paper that it would take to print it. Bill Hoad, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
This letter from Phil Yates is about taking High Street back to the 1930s. I agree with E. Mayer's views on our High Street, Chronicle Letters, March 26. It is not the same shopping centre as I remember it in the 1930s. It is hard to imagine, but then 11 butchers, 5 tailors, 4 open shop fronts, 2 fruit and veg and 2 fishmongers, adorned the Roman High Street, along with 5 pubs, a cinema, 3 high-class restaurants, and, of course, Woolworths, the Throckney and Sixpenny store. Many High Street shops were family-run, where camaraderie existed between proprietor and customer. Some business owners took an active part in the city's affairs and became mayors of Winchester. I refer to Messrs. Warren, Edmonds, Townend and Clifton. What does the High Street offer shoppers today? For a start, there are 5 mobile phone shops, 4 building societies, 6 estate agents, all clustered together, numerous coffee bars, some incorporated in department stores, and naturally we must not forget those market stalls which dominate the High Street. I give you 3 guesses which High Street I prefer. I am conducting a tour of the High Street of the 1930s for City of Winchester Trust members in June, some of whom are comparative newcomers to our city. It will be interesting to hear their views at the end of the tour. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
The title of this letter is Litter Bugs Should Be Prosecuted, and it comes from Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council. I fully share your readers' concerns about litter on the highways. It is a national disgrace. Statutory responsibility for litter clearance rests, however, with the Highways Agency and district authorities, not the County Council. That is not to say we are oblivious to the problem, and I do recognise there is a limit on such funding these authorities have available to spend. I would very much like to see society bear down more heavily on people who think it's acceptable to drop litter. That has worked in other parts of the world. I also think more effort on litter clearing should come from community payback offenders. On National Community Clear-Up Day on March the 21st, I worked with a team of volunteers in my home village of Wellow clearing litter along the A36. I know many public-spirited people right across the county took part on that day, and many do it year-round. To them I say thank you. In short, more prosecutions of litter bugs, more use of community payback offenders, more effort by the relevant authorities, more volunteering, and above all, to those who think it's okay to chuck litter. Don't. Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council, Winchester.
Russ Evans of Kingsworthy says, "It is not affordable housing we oppose." Mental health problems notwithstanding, City Councillor Ian Tate demonstrates arrogance and a lack of understanding when he says, "Residents who oppose new affordable housing in Kingsworthy should feel absolutely appalled," reported in the Chronicle, March the 26th. Such a wildly sweeping generalisation is not worthy of one who should be a supporter of local democracy. As a resident of Kingsworthy, I have not met anyone opposed to affordable housing. Indeed, I and many of my neighbours voted to increase the number of both affordable and privately owned houses proposed for the site under the LPP2 plans from 30 to 50 to enable more people to live in this lovely area. This is in addition to the 200 or so mixed-type homes which are also due to be built in the village. Kingsworthy also happily accommodates a much higher percentage of affordable and social housing than any other area around Winchester, 17% compared to an average of 11%. What the people of Kingsworthy do not want is the rural exception site known as Top Field to be built on with any type of housing, affordable, social or private. It's one of the few areas left in this rapidly expanding village where people can enjoy open space and wildlife. Despite local opposition, Councillor Tate, who incidentally does not even live in Kingsworthy, thinks it is quite acceptable to support the plans for Top Field and gives no thought to the disadvantages this would bring to those of us who do live in the village. It is offensive that he also insults those of us who protest in a wholly democratic and considered manner. I would like to suggest that Mr. Tate concentrates on regaining his health, focuses on his own ward in the city, and leaves us well alone. Russ Evans, Laburnum Drive, Kingsworthy.
This is another letter referring to Mr. Mayor's views and is headed, "Markets need to be managed properly," and it comes from Eric Horn. Mr. Mayor is absolutely right. Letters March 19th. Councillor Gottlieb deserves to be given the freedom of what is left of our once beautiful city, with maybe a statue next to Alfred. But referring to the street market and the variety of cuisine it offers, as well as products that some of us actually need to buy, it seems that Winchester is now a city of differing cultures and not everyone wants a bacon sandwich anymore. The market has adapted accordingly and sells food which is in demand. However, the conflict with the businesses that pay vast sums of money to be here must be addressed. And a cooked food outlet located outside a chocolate shop is perhaps not a good idea. This shows a lack of common sense by the market managers and no consideration for the shopkeeper. Markets are a traditional part of urban life, always have been and I hope always will be. I'm disappointed that no provision seems to have been made for a marketplace in any plans for the future. When William the Conqueror was in charge and lived here, yes, really, the city apparently became French-speaking. So no doubt the market at that time, in Market Street, nothing new, had to provide for the French demands, and that probably upset the locals, who didn't have a chronicle to write to. Eric Horn, Sussex Street, Winchester.
This letter is from R.L. Cornford of Old Alsford and is entitled, "What a Setback for Hampshire Police." I was appalled to read the remarks of Simon Hayes that by 2017 he will have changed completely the ethos of policing in Hampshire, with the county being mainly policed from just three stations, Southampton, Portsmouth and Basingstoke. What other city of a major county doesn't have a proper police station in its centre, with its officers reduced to working out of any old office that can fit them in? The security of sensitive documents and information is just one concern. Mr. Hayes says that Hampshire Police will have lost 1,000 officers by 2017. That is approximately 30%. Does he care to say how many of them will be frontline officers, i.e. those that do the street work, or how many will be chair polishers of chief inspector rank and above? Does he also care to state how many actual officers will be policing Winchester and its environs 24/7? A city with a level one Crown Court, prison and other vulnerable establishments in the area. What a comedown for the once proud Hampshire Constabulary. R.L. Cornford, Kiln Lane, Old Alsford.
And this letter from Mif Khayyam says he's proud to be a small fish. In response to your reporter Lauren Howard's online article announcing the launch date of Wagamama in Drury Street, I would be grateful for the opportunity to make some clarifications. Firstly, although flattered to be called a business rival, I'm hardly in a position to compete with our new neighbour. Wagamama has over 140 branches nationally and internationally and is owned by Duke Street Capital with total assets of £2.6 billion. I am proud to be a small fish, as this keeps me very much in touch with the community I serve. Secondly, I did object to later proposed changes to the original application on the basis that it was sad to lose a religious and community facility in the city centre, that elements of the changed plans would make it very difficult for my suppliers to access our service area, and that Wagamama may affect other small independent traders that were providing similar cuisine. Our humble group of eateries has a very different target market, specialising in Indian, Thai and sushi. Actually, we've been very impressed by the property owners and their refurbishment team's attitude and consideration of the needs of neighbouring properties and residents. Wagamama will be a welcome addition to Winchester's diverse dining offerings, and we wish them the best in their new premises, Mif Khayyam, Drury Street, Winchester.
This letter is from Mark Oaten. A word upon the upcoming election. It's now 5 years since I stood down as MP for Winchester, and I have stayed silent on political issues since then. But with the election campaign now underway, I wanted to express an opinion on its outcome. Firstly, I feel that Steve Brine has been an honest and good local MP, working hard for the community, and I hold him in high regard. However, I disagree with him on Europe and gay marriage. Second, I think the Coalition has done a remarkable job to stay together and take tough action to bring about a stronger economy. And Nick Clegg should take credit for the difficult choice he made. Finally, I wish to offer my full support and vote for Jackie Porter, the Lib Dem candidate in Winchester and Chandler's Ford. I remain a Liberal at heart, and I know she shares these values of equality and fairness, and she would be an excellent MP for the area. It's certainly going to be an interesting few weeks ahead. Mark Oaten, High Street, Twyford.
That's the letters to the editor this week. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject that you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836, 01962 860836. Or you can email, this is all lowercase, no spaces, news@hampshirechronicle.com. 5upperbrook.co.uk, or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, staying with the opinions of the public for the time being, the topic of Your Say this week is about small traders no longer allowed to display cigarettes for sale. Over to you, Jerry.
Is this a good idea? We asked members of the public. Emma Swift, 36, a graphic designer of Takedown Meads, said, "Out of sight, out of mind. I don't want my kids seeing them. They know what they are, but I think it's better for them to be hidden away. It's an addiction. It's not good for you, and it should be made obvious it's not good for you." Sharon Arneson, 41, a full-time mum of Keats Close, Oliver's Battery, said, "I think they should be hidden away from view. Whether it will discourage people from smoking, I'm doubtful. Taxes have increased and it hasn't deterred people. But if it helps save even a couple of people, it might save lives." Douglas Bishop, 19, a student of Grosvenor Drive, Abbots Barton, said, "Well, I think it should be done. At the moment, all the pubs I visit already do it. You know they're there by asking for them. I think it will stop people start smoking, but people who already smoke won't stop just because they can't see it." And Stuart Barlas, 20, another student of Barleydown Drive, Badger Farm, said, "If you don't see them, you're less likely to buy them. I'd be happy with putting away alcohol away as well. Anything that can stop people from smoking is a step in the right direction."
And we have first person now. And Khalid Aziz is the contributor, and Robin has his article. It's all about ducks, isn't it?
Yes, it's the title is Perfect Bank Holiday for a Duck Race. Easter Monday dawned bright and sparkling with the increasingly warm sunshine, quickly thawing the grass frost, which had descended thanks to clear overnight skies. Perfect weather for our village duck race, the high spot of the sporting calendar in St Mary Bourne. The ducks had failed to take to the waters of the Bourne Rivulet for some years. This headwater of the test was first hit by an almighty drought, which meant the river failed to rise, and then there was too much water in subsequent years. Not that the surface of water in itself was the problem, rather more that the 9-inch sewer which serves the Bourne Valley, interesting factoid that just might win you a pub quiz, became inundated by groundwater, causing unfortunate backup in the centre of the village. Southern Water's solution was to pump sewage, rich effluent, into the rivulet, causing a health hazard. So, despite it being part of a highly prized chalk stream, we were banned from going near the water. And so were the ducks. This year was different. The rivulet was flowing well, gin clear and ready to take 500 yellow plastic ducks, plus one. More on this later. The start is similar to the Grand National, a bun fight, but with no chance of recall. Once they've splashed in, they're off on their half mile meandering course. The rivulet flows through some private land out of view, and there was much muttering of dark dealings. Whatever happened when the leading ducks hove into view, the first four were well strung out, with several yards between 1, 2, 3, and 4. Small children strained to see the winning numbers permanently marked underneath. Few ducks maintain an even keel. Dogs, particularly ours, had to be restrained as they sought to show off with a well-executed water retrieve in front of an admiring audience of several hundred. There are rapids, and that did for several. Plastic ducks know little of how to take the right line through the turbulent water. Ranunculus, already growing well, had broached the surface in places, beaching several as they rounded the bend, only to be released by small boys with sticks and matrons with rather more sophisticated prods that looked for all the world like giant loo brushes. And then plus one came into view, not far from the front, a large pink duck, some 50 times the size of the others, and like its sponsor, Mrs. G, gliding serenely and carrying all before in its magnificence. Out of nowhere, Mr. and Mrs. B produced wine glasses, wine and glasses, creating a members' enclosure at Henley effect, well appreciated by yours truly and others who were hovering hopefully. So fun for all the family, and a tradition re-established in glorious bank holiday weather. All the ducks were backed in support of the village shop. The winner walked off with £50, and Mrs. Aziz won a case of beer for sponsoring the last duck home. The last shall also be the first.
Well, we all know now to back the pink ducks. Thank you very much. And we've got three items from Belgarum now. And the first is going to be read by Jerry on the subject of old bikes. Jerry?
Yes, thank you, Ros. Old bikes. A warning to all cyclists in Winchester. If you forget to collect your bike, it might be removed by the City Council. It recently issued two notices on bikes outside the Middlebrook Centre. So far this year, three bikes have been removed and eight notices given. A council spokesman said the idea is to keep the city tidy. The aim is to remove unsightly, damaged or otherwise abandoned cycles from the city centre in accordance with the council's clean and green ethos and to free spaces for cyclists to use on a daily basis, he said. There is no specific length of time that a bicycle has to be abandoned prior to a notice being issued. It's a judgment depending on location and the condition of the bike in question. The removed bikes are stored at a council depot, and if they are not reclaimed, they are given to charity or scrapped.
And I have one entitled Mayor's Blunders Lighten Mood at Council Meeting. And don't they need that? But this one says, Winchester's Mayor Eileen Berry was in fine form at the council meeting last week. Paying tribute to retiring councillor Chris Pine, she said, he served until 1910. The slip-up was greeted with unanimous laughter. We knew Councillor Pines was old, but he's looking well for being 170. Later, the mayor renamed Councillor Kim Gottlieb as Councillor 8. Mixing him up with the number of the question he was raising. It gave the proceedings a slightly Orwellian flavour. The council was about to discuss Silver Hill, so perhaps the dystopian flavour was appropriate.
Music video decodes story of Ben and Victoria. It is the story of a teenager's quest for love which covered the streets of Winchester. Posters and chalk messages went up across the city centre last month in the hunt for Victoria, an elusive beauty who caught the eye of bumbling romantic Ben. Now the Winchester University students behind the Are You My Victoria campaign have released the music video it was designed to promote. The surreal clip for Reading-based rock band The Quotes shows Ben watching Victoria from afar at P&G Wells Bookshop in College Street. When he misses his chance to start a conversation, he launches a flyer campaign to track her down. Student marketing group Buttercross Media splashed the story across the streets, gathering hundreds of well-wishers on social media who thought the flyers were genuine. But the video ends when Ben wakes, wheelchair-bound, to realise the story was a dream, born of fear that his girlfriend won't be able to cope with his disability. The students have apologised for illegal flyering and graffiti which they used to promote the campaign, leaving messages across Stanmore, the city centre and the front of Winchester Guildhall.
And we've got historical items now, starting with 200 years ago, April the 10th, 1815. A message from the Prince Regent. The message from the Prince Regent has been delivered to Parliament. expressing the determination of the British government to abide by our allies and conjointly with them to restore France to her lawful government, of which she has been deprived contrary to the faith of treaties. Painful as it is to dwell upon the events which have so unexpectedly broken in upon us, and dreadful as are likely to be the effects of such change, there is a duty which we are called upon to perform, to enter our solemn protest against such an innovation which threatens the peace and repose of the world. And second item of 200 years ago. Three great armies march against France, one on the north, one south, and the third in Italy. The first, commanded by the Duke of Wellington, will be strengthened by 40,000 Prussians as auxiliaries. The Austro-Bavarian army, under Princes Schwarzenberg and Reid, will unite upon the Upper Rhine. The army of Italy will be commanded by the Archduke Charles in a very short time, and there will be in all 950,000 troops on the frontiers of France. And Jerry, with 100 years, please.
April the 10th, 1915. Scottish battalions on the move. It is rumoured that the battalions of Scottish regiments, which have been billeted in Winchester since February the 18th, will be moving to other quarters next week, and it is believed there will be a much larger concentration of troops in the various camps in the neighbourhood of the city in the near future. On Wednesday and Thursday, approximately the same number of troops as passed through the city last week were accommodated here, being billeted as before in schools and buildings. They were mostly infantry, but were accompanied by artillery. And the second item. Official reports continue to give excellent accounts of the Russian advance in the Carpathians. More progress has been made, particularly in the direction of the Azok Pass. The Times correspondent with the Russian forces described the desperate fighting in the Dukla Pass of the Carpathians. He reports that the defence of the Carpathians is the last effort that Austria-Hungary can muster, and that if her troops fail, nothing can prevent a Russian invasion of Hungary. The communique of the Russian General Staff, issued at Petrograd on Saturday, says, "On Thursday, in the Carpathians, we took 100 officers and more than 7,000 men prisoners."
And there are two items from 50 years ago, April the 9th, 1965. The first is headed, "What a terrible piece of work." The mesmerising effect of modern art on the human mind was referred to at Wednesday's meeting of the Winchester City Council by Alderman Eric Neat. Speaking on a planning committee proposal to erect three abstract sculptured panels as relief on the corners of the New Tower Street car park, he declared, "This is a terrible piece of work. I hope the council throws it out." After a lengthy and heated debate, it was agreed by a majority vote that the consideration of the panels as proposed be deferred until the main fabric was completed, an amendment put forward by Councillor M.C. Gardner. And the second item, the erection of a new church and vestries in Trussell Crescent Week was described by the chairman of the planning committee, Councillor Mrs. Carpenter-Turner, as an exciting and interesting occasion. The site for the church, which will seat 200, will be next to the hall and rectory in Trussell Crescent off Fromond Road, Week. Alderman Eric Neat expressed anxiety about the roofline of the church, which he said gave a feeling of weakness. The roof would have a kink in it at one end, making it look as though it had a broken back.
25 years ago, April the 6th, 1990. City wombles pick up litter. Hundreds of people in the Mid-Hampshire area armed themselves with plastic bags to rid their patches of that most unsightly problem, litter. Six skips of rubbish were collected by the willing wombles, litter pickers of Winchester and surrounding parishes last weekend. Seven schools and 12 parishes made the time to keep their environment litter-free and make the Winchester area spring clean. The Tidy Up was in support of National Spring Clean Day, organised by the Tidy Britain Group. Richard Botham, who coordinated the City Council's efforts, said it went very well, and the six skips put out in the parishes were all full.
Thank you, everyone. And those were our weekly regular features for you. And now we're going to take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks or so. Now, this week we've got four items with some information about upcoming events. And before we go on to theatre and gardens, we'd like to read you those. And Claire has the first, please.
A Tragic Obsession. Wuthering Heights, Mayfair Theatre, Southampton. A much-loved tale of passionate and obsessive love will be performed in Southampton. The Northern Ballet presents Wuthering Heights, based on Emily Bronte's romantic masterpiece, at the Mayflower Theatre from April the 22nd to the 25th. This dramatic adaptation is choreographed by the company's artistic director, David Nixon, and set to an original score by celebrated composer Claude Michel Schoenberg, known for his West End and Broadway hits Les Miserables and Miss Saigon. David said, Wuthering Heights is not a novel that you read and put back on the shelf. It is a story that absorbs you, creating powerful imagery that stays with you long after you turn the last page. In my adaptation of this timeless tale, I have brought to life the key elements of the narrative, focusing on the intensity and devastation of the relationship between Kathy and Heathcliff. And the box office number is 02380711811.
Sign up to become a dementia friend. Two free sessions to raise awareness of dementia and encouraging people to be dementia friends are to be held in Winchester. The Dementia Friends sessions are at the Discovery Centre on Monday, April the 20th at 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. to noon. The sessions are being organised by the Dementia Friendly Winchester, a local action group comprising association organisations, businesses and people committed to making Winchester more dementia friendly. Dementia friends learn about what it is like to live with dementia and will become part of a national initiative helping people with dementia to feel included in their communities. To book, contact Nicola Lawrence on 01962 848 083 or email nlawrence@winchester.gov.uk. I'll repeat the number 01962 848 083.
Arts Festival gearing up for its 16th year. Tickets will soon go on sale for a week-long summer arts festival. Now in its 16th year, the Winchester Festival of the Arts will launch later this month, with tickets going on sale from May the 5th. Last year saw headline concerts from Hampshire County Youth Orchestra and local chamber choirs Ashton Singers and Southern Voices. Lunchtime recitals by performers with a local connection have become a feature of the festival, as well as exhibitions by youngsters from nearby schools. It also sees a range of engaging speakers, which in 2014 included Sir Ranulph Fiennes, Sir Jonathan Miller, Germaine Greer, Baroness Julia Neuberger and David Starkey. Director Carol Butler said, Winchester is home to numerous cultural events, many of which focus on a particular theme or anniversary. The Winchester Festival's strength lies in tapping into the demand for a broad spectrum of eminent speakers and classical musicians, with a few surprises along the way. The Winchester Festival of the Arts runs from July the 3rd to the 11th and the programme will be released on April the 20th. Then tickets go on sale on May the 5th from the Cathedral box office. For more information, go online at Winchester Festival, that's all one word, winchesterfestival.co.uk.
And the final item. This is an exhibition. It's headed Battle Recalled in Exhibition. One of the bloodiest clashes in European history has come to life with a huge battlefield model in Winchester. A new exhibition, marking the 200th anniversary of the Battle of Waterloo, was opened by the Duke of Wellington at a recent ceremony at the Royal Green Jackets Museum. With Rifles to Waterloo examines the causes and consequences of Napoleon's rise to power and his defeat by Wellington in 1815. Its centrepiece is a 25-square-metre diorama of the final Belgian battlefield, encompassing every moment of the conflict using 30,000 model soldiers and horses. Conservators Kevin and Mary Thatcher spent months restoring the 1970s model. One personal touch they discovered from the original model maker was a British soldier laughing whilst urinating against a tree. The six-month exhibition is the result of 3 years of planning, a 100,000 Heritage Lottery Fund grant and 200,000 in donations. I'm sorry. Museum Chairman Sir Christopher Wallace said, "We set out from the outset to create an exhibition that is modern and different, that inspires our visitors to learn more about our nation's history, and that includes hand-on displays and information that will interest and excite all the family." With Rifles to Waterloo runs 7 days a week until September the 25th, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Entry to the museum and exhibition costs £4. And this is accompanied by a really jolly picture of the Duke of Wellington talking to soldiers appropriately dressed in historical uniform. I'm a little bit concerned because they are all hysterically laughing at something amusing that we can't see. I hope it isn't that aforementioned British soldier. And there is also inset a beautiful picture of the model itself. Very, very impressive. Certainly worth seeing, I think. And we're going to go on now to various other What's On. There's a mixture here for you. We're going to start in the open air. The weather this week has been so glorious, we must begin in the gardens. And the first one listed is The Island in Greatbridge, Romsey. And it runs from Saturday and Sunday, April the 18th and 19th. And it's described as 6 acres either side of the River Teste and has a fine display of daffodils and spring-flowering trees. It runs at 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. Admission is £5 and there will be plants for sale and teas. And the second gardens, we've had this before, but it's worth a look. It's every Monday, excluding bank holidays, The Mill, Gordleton, Silver Street, Sway. The best part of The Mill is the river and rambling gardens. The streams are full of fish, visiting heron most mornings, and sometimes a kingfisher. And that's 11 until 4 p.m. Admission is £3 and you'll find that there will be light refreshments. Now, talks and meetings. The first one listed here is Tuesday, April the 14th. That's next Tuesday. Catherine King, Undaunted Women. It's at the Stripe Building, University of Winchester, Sparkford Road. It's at 7:30 p.m. and it's the Hampshire Writers' Society talk by Catherine King, an exploration of 19th century women's struggles in her novels. Guest, Judith Hennigan. And it's a news update. The information on that is to be got on 01962 712 307. That number again, 01962 712 307. The entry fee is £5. And one more on talks and meetings on Wednesday, April the 15th, Saving the River Itchen. It's a Badger Farm Community Centre, that's by the Sainsbury's car park, Winchester SO22 4QB, 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust has an illustrated talk on ecology and threats to wildlife. That entry fee is £3, and the number to ring about it is 01962 881 312. That's 01962 881 312. And theatre. At the Theatre Royal Winchester, the Pirates of Penzance are sailing in. That's Monday to Saturday, April the 20th to the 25th at 7:30 p.m. They have matinees on Thursday and Saturday, Thursday at 1:30 and Saturday at 2:30. And the telephone number of the Theatre Royal box office is 01962 840 440. So for Gilbert and Sullivan, that number again, 01962 840 440. At the Mayflower, Southampton, if you like Monty Python, they're bringing Spamalot to the theatre. And that's on Saturday, the 11th of April, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday and Saturday of that week at 7:30 p.m. Friday, two performances, 5:30 and 8:30. And on Wednesday and Saturday at 2 p.m. That's Monty Python's Spamalot at the Mayflower on 023 8071 1811. 023 8071 1811. And at the Discovery Centre in Winchester, another Gilbert and Sullivan, The Gondoliers. And that's on Saturday, April the 18th at 8 p.m. And the Discovery Centre box office number is 01962 873 603. That's 01962 873 603. And those are our What's On items around the region for the next couple of weeks. I hope you manage to get to some and enjoy them. And before the general news, well, a final announcement of the lighting up times. Starting on Saturday the 11th of April, the sun will set at 3:45, I'm sorry, I'll repeat that, will set at 3:54 p.m. And on Wednesday the 15th of April, the sun will rise at 6:11 a.m. and with a lighting up time on that day at 8 p.m. Lovely, the days are getting longer and warmer. And so on to items of the general news, and Claire will be kicking us off with that.
Bridal designer creates uniform. A Whitchurch bridal designer had the honour of creating the uniform for the new High Sheriff of Hampshire, who was sworn in at a ceremony in Winchester. Mother of three, Lady Louisa Portal, who lives in Ashe near Basingstoke, became the High Sheriff of Hampshire for 2015-16 at a ceremony at the Hampshire County Council offices. As part of her new role, the 55-year-old is the Queen's representative across Hampshire for all matters relating to law and order, and she will provide support to the police, probation service, law enforcement agencies, emergency services and faith groups. Lady Portal will also support the Lord Lieutenant of Hampshire, Nigel Atkinson, on his visits and will support local charities and organisations involved in crime reduction. She chose bridal designer Pauline Forster, who has a shop in Church Street, Whitchurch, to make the uniform that she will wear at official engagements. The uniform consists of a green velvet jacket and dress, special buttons which belong to her father-in-law, complete with lace details around her neckline to provide the finishing touch. Lady Portal said, "We had a lot of fun. I approached her about a year ago to make it. It had to be based on a man's 18th century court dress, and she had ideas and I had ideas. She's done it very beautifully and she's gone to so much trouble." Pauline, who's 37, of Camrose Way, Cranbourne, Basingstoke, added, "I'm very proud and she looked amazing when she had it all on." And there's a picture of the two of them with Lady Portal in full uniform.
children's card game is making history. A Hampshire-based company which launched a card game designed to boost children's knowledge of history has gone from strength to strength. History Heroes, based in Ropley, was relaunched last year by local resident Alexandra Ehrman in order to help children develop an understanding of history. The pocket-sized card games contain over 1,000 years of history with 40 of the greatest heroes across different themes. The themes cover explorers, scientists, World War I heroes and sports heroes, and went on to help the company win Junior Magazine's 2014 Best Toy Design. Ropley Primary School has even adopted the new games to help stimulate learning across their classrooms, and the piece is illustrated with a picture of two pupils sitting looking at the cards on the table.
And now a short piece which I suspect will surprise very few people. It says that Winchester is the second least affordable city in the UK. Two Hampshire cities are among the most unaffordable in the country, a new report has found. Winchester is the second least affordable place in the UK, according to Lloyds Bank, based on house prices compared to local earnings, and Southampton comes in at 11th place. House prices in Winchester are more than 10 times the average local wage, while in Southampton, homes cost around 7.5 times the average earnings. Andy Hume, Lloyds Bank Mortgages Director, said, "House price rises in the past 2 years have resulted in a deterioration in home affordability in the majority of UK cities, and generally widening the north-south affordability divide as the market has been strongest in the south. The UK's most successful cities economically have tended to see the strongest property price rises. Aberdeen, the country's oil and gas capital, has recorded the biggest gains over the past decade, whilst London has been the top performer during the economic recovery. With an average price of £1,580, Stirling remains the UK's most affordable city, with a property there costing around 3.9 times gross average annual earnings.
Farewell to Les, aged 101. One of Hampshire's oldest men has died, aged 101. Les Holder of Ellingham Close, Alsford, passed away on March the 28th, shortly before his 102nd birthday. He lived for many years in Cheriton and worked at Blackhouse Farm near Hinton Ampner before retiring to Alsford. Mr. Holder remained active, and in 2012 the Chronicle reported how he battled to retain the right to keep his mobility scooter outside his home. He took an interest in the allotments in Alsford that were opened in 2005. Allotment holder Andrew Napier said, "I remember Mr. Holder visiting and saying he was considering taking a plot. It was hard to believe he was then in his 90s. There will be a private family service at Basingstoke Crematorium next Wednesday at 10:15 a.m, followed by a celebration of his long life at St. John's Church in Alsford at noon. Everybody is welcome."
Celebrating arrival of new community bus. Villagers gathered for cake and afternoon tea to toast the arrival of their new community bus. The Colden Common Community Care Group welcomed the 16-seater Citroën following months of fundraising. School children, parish hall trust committees and Winchester Rotary all contributed to the £41,000 bus, which will help the club members get around town. The trust was set up in 1982 to help those in need with a weekly lunch club and transport. It is now used by the village's Friendship Club, Rainbow Playgroup and Primary School. Chairman Jenny Gray said, "Thank you to all those who supported financially in various ways. We have also had anonymous donations from the villagers, which has been wonderful. Our treasurers have been very good and kept a very careful eye on what has been going in and out of the accounts, so thankfully we didn't have to start from scratch. She added, if anybody is interested, we do need volunteers.
CQC brands care home inadequate. A Chandler's Ford care home has been branded inadequate after an inspection by a health watchdog. The Care Quality Commission has told managers at Chandler's Ford Christian Nursing Home they need to urgently improve after finding a number of problems during a visit earlier this year. Among the failings discovered at the home were staff leaving patients undressed after rushing off to answer other calls, storing prescription medicine in the care home's hair salon, failure to keep accurate and detailed shift records. According to the report, the home in which Sterode is failing to provide a safe and effective care is not well led and is not responding to people's needs well enough. Other issues included not respecting residents' privacy or dignity and not involving residents in their own care plans. A spokesman for the home insisted a robust action plan had been introduced to help turn the home around. However, Adrian Hughes, CQC Deputy Chief Inspector of Adult Social Care, warned the home should make improvements quickly and said it will be inspected again to ensure they have been implemented. He said, the way in which the provider operated the service failed to meet the fundamental aspects of good care that people have the right to expect, high quality, compassionate and safe. He added, residents were treated with kindness and compassion by staff, and that advice was often sought from GPs, therapists and psychiatrists around individual resident care, but not always followed through. A spokesman for the home said, following a CQC inspection in January, we immediately put in place a robust action plan to address all points raised. This included additional management support, enhanced staff training, and a thorough review of all care plans with each person we support. We have openly communicated the actions we are taking with residents and relatives and have regularly updated all relevant agencies of the improvements we've made. Nothing is more important to us than the health, safety, and well-being of those we support.
More 20-mile-per-hour zones to be considered. Hampshire civic chiefs are considering extending 20-mile-an-hour zones into more villages, including Micheldever, a meeting heard. The council heard that the county is considering similar restrictions into other areas where requests are made. The success of recent schemes, such as the 20 limits in Winnell and Stanmore, are being monitored. Councillor Ernie Jeffs, portfolio holder for Communities and Transport, told the meeting last Wednesday, the police will only support reduced speed limits where the existing average speeds are at or close to the proposed new limit. Setting unrealistic speed limits will merely create an unmanageable enforcement problem for the police and further frustration for the local community when the limit is continually abused.
Information sought on bus stop hit and run. Police are investigating after a bus shelter was badly smashed in a suspected hit and run. A passerby called police at 3:34 a.m. on Easter Monday after noticing the damage at the junction of Andover Road and Stony Lane in Week. A sign and the bus shelter were completely flattened. Nearby residents said they heard a loud bang, followed by a revving engine and a vehicle driving away. Police say they will take proportionate investigations to find out how it happened. The shelter is on a main route into Winchester city centre. Anyone with information should call 101 or, to be anonymous, the charity Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111. And the piece is illustrated by a photograph showing the bus shelter reduced to absolutely nothing.
rise in demand for emergency food. A Winchester charity providing emergency food and clothes has fed nearly 1,200 children over the last 12 months. At their annual general meeting, Basics Bank organisers said the demand for their services continues to rise as a direct result of cuts to benefits by the government. The outcome means they have seen the number of families referred to them rise by 7.7% to 660, and the number of children rise by 8% to 1,153 in 2014. Though the increase was less sharp than in 2013, the chairman of the trustees, Jane Hart, said the situation was a very sad reflection on society. She added, "The rise has continued. Although the spike was not as high, it's been climbing, and families and children are being referred to us more and more. Families are struggling to make ends meet." You do read quite often that people are living off food banks, and that's absolutely not the case. It shows we are a service for emergencies. With all these crises, we are totally reliant on food donations, and we are very grateful to our regular contributors, such as local schools and churches, who donates during the year. We cannot carry on without this ongoing support. Ms. Hart told the meeting the bank was looking for additional space to help them store donations. Since buying in fresh food from food supply organisation Fair Share, they've been unable to store as many clothes and, as a result, now only keep suits and weather-dependent clothes at their Milland Road base. "We've been experiencing increasing pressure on space, despite the provision of a garage by Winchester City Council, which we use for storing tins and jars. The board recognises that we need to find additional premises, preferably a city centre outlet, to ease the pressures on Milland Road and to improve access and delivery. This is a major challenge for us in the coming year." Three new trustees were appointed to the board. They were Peter Smith, Tony Atherton, and Darius Swarovski.
Thank you very much, everyone. And that concludes our extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for this week. May I remind you that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. And we'd like to thank our editors, Gordon and Liz, not to mention the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And many thanks to our readers too. Claire?
Bye.
Robin?
Goodbye.
Jerry?
Bye.
And from me, Roz. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Have a very good week and we'll see you next time. Thank you for listening.